When I reach out to someone else to find out information about your company, of course, you're a private company, you don't have to talk to me. But when you don't talk to me, then I will find someone else who will talk to me about you. I'll try and find public documents that say something that I'm looking for. And I'll come up with my own story. And I'll try and get as many sources as I can to make sure I've got it right. But there's a chance if I'm not talking to you, there's a chance I'm going to get it wrong. So if a reporter is digging on you, your best bet is to respond and talk to that reporter, because they're going to write something anyway, and you want to make sure that they get it right.
Welcome to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew. Millard Chan and Andrew Moss launched this podcast to give a voice to the countless founders, angel investors, incubators, supporters, and startup events located in San Diego.
Welcome back to another episode of Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew. I'm Andrew. Mill, how you doing?
I am doing great, Andrew. We are sitting here in the conference room here at the San Diego Business Journal. What I love about doing these Startup Talk podcast is the interesting people we meet, but also the cool places that we get to go to.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. We get to see the inner workings of not only the businesses we're interviewing, but the people who work there too. So it's always a nice time.
We're right in the heart of a real newspaper business.
Absolutely. Now, today we are joined by Brittany Meiling. She's a journalist with the San Diego Business Journal and focuses on the startup community, both high tech and biotech in San Diego. She's been covering startups here in San Diego since 2014. Brittany, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Well, let's jump right in. Tell us how you got involved with the San Diego Business Journal covering the startup scene.
So when I graduated from college in Missouri, I graduated with a kind of emphasis in business reporting, journalism degree. And I had interned with a business journal in Springfield, Missouri. And so when I moved out to California, I right away sought out the Business Journal in San Diego. And I started freelancing with them. And after about a week of doing stories related to biotech, they brought me on full time as their healthcare reporter, which does not cover generally startups.
Wait, so hold on, Brittany. You moved to San Diego with no job at the Business Journal and you just moved here?
That's right.
And how did you go about finding that first job? Was it?
So I was told it was going to be really difficult to move to a new market without having any leads on jobs. But I did not find that to be true. I did a lot of preparation on how to job hunt and just reached out directly to the editor after having sent in a kind of ridiculous cover letter about food that's native to my hometown, and he thought it was funny and so brought me in. But I was a new college grad, which is not really what the Business Journal generally looks for in their reporters. So they kind of put me on a trial run. They're like, let's see how you can handle some of these stories. So after freelancing for a couple of stories, it went well. And so I've been here ever since, and I kind of carved out my own beat after about a year of writing.
No, that's great to hear. And so you
also, let's recognize that cannot be common to actually get a full-time gig after just writing a couple of stories.
I was told, I remember being in college, all of my advisors who had been in the journalism world for, a very long time, told me that it was going to be very difficult getting in, especially at a newspaper with only a few reporters, because they're looking for veteran reporters generally. So luckily, I think I had rapport with the editor here, and they've been very open to training me. I like being mentored, and we're just a good fit.
No, that's great. I mean, there's a lot of places where you go and there's people, the older generation that work there aren't open to that sort of new generation coming in and potentially trying to take their jobs and their stories. And, the fact that the San Diego Business Journal allows you to sort of follow and, have a mentor here is a great asset for you.
It is, absolutely.
So you were mainly focused on the biotech side of the startup community, but you recently made the shift over to the high tech side. What differences have you noticed in covering the different industries?
I've thought about this, and I think, maybe it's not the most flattering thing, but I think the biggest difference I noticed is maturity level. And I just mean of the industry in general. So when I was covering biotech primarily, these are people who have been in the business for a very long time. If they were starting a startup, they had, decades of experience already. They had done this before. A lot of them are serial entrepreneurs, definitely know what they're doing. And then I started being plugged into the tech startup scene. And the entrepreneurs in that space are very young. fresh out of college, and they've clearly not done a lot of ventures before. So it's a lot of learning. Also, they're a lot more honest and upfront with the media, which the longer that you're in business, the less that you do that, because you're kind of trained out of that. So the biotech community is very formal. The technology community is very informal. And I like having that mix.
Sure.
I mean, we may address it later, but I really do want to kind of just hone in on that topic of how do you address the media? How was it done with a lot of your contacts back in the biotech world?
So most of the biotech companies that I've worked with, well, probably the vast majority, they either hire a public relations agency to work with them, or they have an in-house PR person. And then it's more media outreach. So they're constantly pitching me with emails or phone calls, trying to be like, hey, we're doing something cool. Will you write about us? And so, you know, you get inundated with pitches. You start ignoring the most of them, you know. And so you just want to write about what you find interesting and what you think is important. With the tech community, I hardly ever hear from them, because none of them hire PR agencies. And I don't think they realize that we actually like them to reach out without a PR group. We actually prefer that, if we're being honest.
Okay, so you do, in fact, like people that reach out to you, but you would rather on a personal level from a person that's actually operating in the company as opposed to through an agency.
Absolutely. You cut out the middleman, and reporters, you know, our kind of reputation is we're always short on time. We really don't want to work with a middleman. And now I'm not discounting the value of PR. Just from the reporter's perspective, we would rather get right in touch with the CEO or someone in leadership to give us that pitch.
Sure. I find that shocking that, you know, companies like in the tech industry don't want to reach out to you. Do you think that's just because of, as you said, there's a lot of youth in the tech industry and they don't see the newspaper as a growing way to get your social media, I guess, out, and they kind of focus on, yeah.
Exactly. I think that a lot of, especially the young entrepreneurs I've met, they think that the best way to do public outreach is to do social media campaigns, or reach out to tech blogs that they follow, like, you know, TechCrunch, or, you know, any tech blog that gets a lot of traffic. And I don't think that a local newspaper is their first thought of, that's who I should reach out to. And I think that it just goes, they don't understand the value of having a third party experienced reporter validate you through writing a story. And then also they're not considering the audience that's reading the San Diego Business Journal, for example, or the Union Tribune. The people who are reading, for example, the Business Journal are the business community. Often they're people who are 55 and older, people who have already experienced a certain amount of success, or maybe in touch with investors or people who have money. Startups should want to get in front of these people's eyes.
It does make common sense, but, you know, sometimes it just kind of goes over the heads of many people. So mm-hmm. How do you think the startup ecosystem has changed over the past couple of years since you started covering the ecosystem here?
This is probably also won't be a super popular answer, but and this is something that I've observed just in the last 9 months. So I certainly can't say I'm an expert, but from what I can tell, there was kind of this, they like to call it the old guard, that was involved in the creation of companies. So whether that's supporting the entrepreneurs, you know, ecosystem, these are nonprofit groups. Most of these groups were centered around an expertise that was involved with life sciences expertise, right? And so then there was this new group of entrepreneurs in the last, I would say, just less than 5 years. And I think a lot of them came out of EvoNexus, and they got into leadership, and they started seeing that there was a lot of support for the life science startups, but there wasn't a lot of support for the technology startups. So they started forming their own groups, and now you're seeing a lot of those people, which I'm calling the new blood. So we got the old guard and the new blood, and the new blood is starting to assume a lot of leadership, and they're also getting very noisy. So they are doing outreach and they're doing events and getting a lot of attention.
And you're not afraid to kind of air your opinions in certain types of forums. So for our listeners, there is actually a Slack channel in the San Diego area for San Diego startups. And you're active on the Slack mm-hmm. channel to, I guess, get to know the community, people in the community, and try to generate ideas for stories. But I do remember a post maybe, you know, half a year ago or so where you were talking about a request for more openness within the community. So not just to celebrate the successes, but to actually talk about the failures and in the hopes of learning from those failures and having helping people, to, other people, new people, to avoid making the same mistakes.
Well, I found a lot of the startup. I would say maybe the people who have voices in the startup community, some of them are even media channels as well. They want to be cheerleaders of the community. So they want to talk about what we've done really well and how we're so competitive with other startup communities. And there are a lot of things that we've done well and we are competitive. But I feel like there has been, at least when I come out and I ask people questions about the opportunities in San Diego, you know, what challenges do we have and what do we need to focus on there? Everybody clams up. No one wants to talk about it. And they especially don't want to talk about it publicly to a reporter. And I think that, you know, that's dangerous when you're not willing to publicly say, this is the things that we need to work on to really thrive, then no one's going to step up to the challenge.
Sure. And that kind of leads to the next question for me. You were saying that the new blood is getting more noisy and they're getting more outreach. Where do you see the future of the San Diego startup scene?
This is a really hard question because it depends on a number of factors. So it really depends on who steps up to the plate and which gaps get filled. If things continue like they have been today, it's really hard to say if we'll get the traction that we need for us to really grow. There's a lot of opinions about what San Diego startup community needs, everything from, oh, we've got to have that unicorn in the tech sector, to we've got to have institutional investors, or we have to have, gosh, there's so many, the right kind of talent here. So we need to have, you know, better, you know, degree programs for computer science, that kind of stuff. Some people say it has to do with the concentration of the tech hub. We have to say downtown is where it's at, or Carlsbad is where it's at, and just focus on growing that concentration. And it could be all of those things. So it really depends on the traction.
Yeah, from my vantage point of being involved in the startup world in San Diego for the last 3 years, I think a large part of it has to be the fragmentation of the elements of this ecosystem. Because if you talk about strong academics, you have UC San Diego, San Diego Startup State University, and University of San Diego all have strong entrepreneurship programs in terms of incubators and accelerators around town. You've got Evo Nexus and others. Mm-hmm. On the life sciences side, you've got BioLabs just got launched, and JLabs. Investors, they're investors in town. And there's also been some successes. And Andrew and I talked about this before. Companies like GoFundMe, they got acquired. Ballast Point got acquired for $1 billion or something like that. And so there are these successes. And so, you know,
where did they go, basically?
Yeah. Where do they go? And how do we bind together these groups around town that are all around the startup community, mm-hmm. and so that people can benefit from the experience of others?
I think you make a good point about, for example, Ballast Point being one of our great successes. That, you know, you'll see in Startup Week, they added a new section called Brew Tech, you know, that we're kind of claiming that whole field as our own. Obviously, we have a lot of breweries in town. But I think a lot of people think that's also the problem, is that people who achieve great success and also then have the money and the talent that they're going to get, you know, put back into the community, they're not in the in the tech and software world. And since a lot of startups are, you know, centered on software, and when you don't have a lot of success in that area, then you don't have a lot of traction either.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a challenge. So we talked to Cody Barba, who's the CEO of Industry, recently on Startup Talk, and he talked about how he started out in San Diego trying to raise the initial funds and just got a little bit of traction. Then he went to Los Angeles and got more traction. Then he went up to Sand Hill Road and got the most traction.
Right.
So he was able to raise a $200K initial seed round, followed by a $2.3 million seed round just several months ago. And a large part of that came from the Bay Area. And so, you know, it's a shame when you have a quality company like that that's actually scaling to not have all the resources required. But nevertheless, Cody is a strong proponent of the San Diego ecosystem and definitely doing his part to help to strengthen it.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of I feel like he's a great example of what we should be doing. We can't force institutional investors to pay attention to us. So what we need is entrepreneurs like Cody who are going to try and build a company in San Diego, even though there are these hurdles, and they're going to LA investors and they're going up to San Francisco, getting the money, coming back down to San Diego and growing that company. We need to see more of that, and maybe then, you know, institutional investors will come.
Sure. And if you can comment on it, what are some of the big differences you see between the startups ecosystem here in San Diego compared to, like, say, Los Angeles or the Bay Area?
Well, the Bay Area has a long history that is impossible to recreate. And so, you know, I most of the time say it's not a good measuring stick for us to compare San Diego to. So instead, I'll try and look at communities like Seattle and the Boulder area by Denver, and in Austin, Texas. And actually, we are very similar to those areas. We have the benefit of having this history of life sciences. And so I think that we've got this sweet spot where that whole medical or life science world meets the tech sector as well. And so then we can take advantage of the expertise and the money that is got that expertise behind it in San Diego. And then we can really thrive with that niche.
Excellent. So, you know, what I really want to learn, kind of get your feedback on is, you know, what are some of the biggest mistakes that founders of startups make when talking to the media? I've gotten in situations where I've spoken to the media and, you know, I could never figure out when was it on record, when was it off record, and I just go on and I talk, and then I see something, a draft of what's in print, and it's not quite the way what I had said or not mm-hmm. quite the way that I thought it should be worded. And so, you know, what's your advice on how to reduce the friction in the system? So mm-hmm. what can founders do to make themselves available and open and just have a really good experience in dealing with the media?
Well, I like to tell anyone who will listen that there is no such thing as off the record. And it's just smart to know that as anyone talking to the media. Of course, any respectable reporter, if you tell them this is off the record, they want to maintain trust with you. They want to be able to come back to you as a source. And so they will almost always respect that request. But also, if it's very, very sensitive, go ahead and just don't say it to a reporter, because then they're going to remember that. And they might use that in other stories, maybe not attribute it to you, but it might be something that off the record doesn't mean we can't use it. I might still write something from my own perspective and not attribute it to someone, but then I'm still going public with that information. So just keep that in mind. And so I also think that, you know, I think I covered it.
Well, let me just ask.
Yeah.
Would you advise entrepreneurs to prepare to talk to the media mm-hmm. or to not prepare and just come open and present and just have a conversation? What works better in your experience?
If I'm speaking as a reporter, I'm going to say don't come prepared, because then we get a natural response that works way better for quotes than something that you have rehearsed. And also, keep in mind the goal of the reporter. I think often, especially in the tech community and a lot of entrepreneurs, they look at reporters and newspapers as their PR. Actually, they often refer to, like, when they're talking to me, they're like, well, we really care about this with our PR. And I want to remind them, I am not your PR. I'm not representing you. That's not my goal. So I want to get a story that is honest and good and interesting, and that's what I care about most. So if you're really concerned about your reputation, you're concerned you're going to say the wrong thing, that is where you should seek out a PR agency or a PR company that's going to work for you, because the reporter is not.
That's interesting. And would you, Brittany, would you draw a distinction between, say, social media and, say, traditional media, newspapers, so Snapchat, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, whatever, blogs versus print?
Would I draw a distinction?
Yeah. In how entrepreneurs would deal with all those different channels of the mm-hmm. media, because the media business is pretty broad, covers many, many different sectors, right?
Right, right. I definitely would draw a distinction. I think it's my opinion that when you get in front of an actual reporter with an actual news organization, they're going to do so much work for background to make sure that what you're saying is true. They're also going to look at your competitors. They're going to really see how you, weigh up to your competitors. And then when that reporter writes something that is positive about your company, that says so much more to people than, you know, a blog post that you wrote and shared on social media yourself. That people just look at that and that's advertisement. When you, you know, you get a story in the business journal, I feel like that carries a lot more weight.
So let me ask you, if you write a nice piece about a company, how would you like the interviewees to kind of thank you, or if at all? On the flip side, if you write something that's not so positive about either an organization, company, or movement, how would you like them to kind of address you, to kind of, you know,
respond
to it, if at all?
So I'm not sure if this is going to answer your question, but it does remind me of something that happened recently. When someone reaches out to me, other way around. When I reach out to someone else to find out information about your company, of course, you're a private company, you don't have to talk to me. But when you don't talk to me, then I will find someone else who will talk to me about you. I'll try and find public documents that say something that I'm looking for. And I'll come up with my own story. And I'll try and get as many sources as I can to make sure I've got it right. But there's a chance, if I'm not talking to you, there's a chance I'm going to get it wrong. So if a reporter is digging on you, your best bet is to respond and talk to that reporter, because they're going to write something anyway, and you want to make sure that they get it right.
Look, for example, if you write a nice piece about an entrepreneur, is it okay for them to reach out to you and say, hey, thank you for that nice piece? Or is it kind of like, oh, you're all objective and please don't. I want to stay objective over here. And
you know, it does happen all the time. I constantly get emails saying thank you for the nice piece. And it's nice, but there's also, maybe it's the journalism school just ringing in my head. And when I get a thanks afterwards, I suddenly think, oh, was I objective enough? Did I balance that enough? So yeah, it's kind of two-sided.
Yeah, there has to be that separation between, you know, professionalism and right. friendliness. And, you know, it's a tough balance to strike, that's for sure.
Right.
But then if, let's say it's a piece that a person perceives as not so positive, how mm-hmm. would you best advise them to kind of approach it? You've written an article.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so glowing in a particular situation. So how can they best move on from that?
Well, the first thing is you have to be very objective and read that article again and say, is there anything in this that's wrong, that's false, that I could even sue over? Like, if there's something in there that's absolutely wrong, the reporter got it wrong, you definitely have to reach out to the reporter or their editors and say, there's an error made and I want it fixed right away. We can change it on the web, of course, instantly, and then we can also print a retraction if it's something that's wrong. If you just don't like how the story was framed, or you thought it wasn't, you know, didn't reflect well on you, you have to think, if it's not wrong, if it's not, you know, if there's not a fact that's wrong, they're not going to care. So, you know, of course, you can send us an email or give us a call and yell at us. It happens all the time. But that's not going to get you any results. And also, it's probably going to burn that bridge with that newspaper in the future.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite or memorable interview you've done?
I have many. I think I just got to interview the CEO of Illumina.
Oh, wow.
For the first time, and I've been asking forever, like since I started at the Business Journal. I sent them a request, and of course they're so busy that it was very hard for me to get in. And as soon as Francis D'Souza got appointed, I asked, oh, I'd love to write about him, introduce him to the community. And they were like, let's give him some time. And finally, I think it's been about a year, and they let me in to talk with him. And it was such a nice surprise. Sometimes you go meet with CEOs of, you know, multi-billion-dollar companies, and they're just so formal, and you know, they always repeat the company line, and you can't get anything kind of natural out of the person. And Francis D'Souza wasn't like that at all. He was so easy to talk to, a very humble guy. And then I got to hear a lot about kind of the 5-year strategy plan that Illumina had, and it's just turning into a very different company, and it's very exciting looking forward.
And were you able to interview him one-on-one, or were there other people present?
Oh, it's a company that size, there are always other people present. So, but surprisingly, there was only one other person there. It was the PR person was in the room. But generally, with companies of that size, there's like a team. Like when I interviewed the NuVasive CEO, they had like 4 people in the room along with me and the CEO. So it gets...
This is Greg Lucier?
Yeah, Greg Lucier.
Right.
And you start feeling like you're talking in front of an audience, and you definitely get a way worse interview when the CEO knows that he's got a team of PRs, you know, being worried about every word he's saying.
Of course. He's always glancing over his shoulders or your shoulder at the people sitting behind you.
Right.
When's that piece on Francis D'Souza coming out?
It just came out. It should be, I believe it's in this edition that was just published. So if you go around to stands or you've got your recent edition, it'll be in there.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any shout outs to people or organizations that are having an impact here in San Diego?
Oh, gosh. Yes. I feel like, you know, I get out and talk to a lot of organizations, and I've just been really enjoying the work that Startup Grind has been doing in San Diego. Startup Grind does these speaker events, right? And you know, I go to tons of these, and they start sounding very similar. People cover the same topics all the time. And I've been really surprised with the new director of this local chapter. He's doing these Q&As with some local startup leaders and asking them really tough questions, which I know as a reporter is hard to get someone to answer these tough questions. And he's asking them about things that are very real to the entrepreneurs rather than stuff about unicorns, things that are never going to happen. So I appreciate what he's doing at Startup Grind. And then Startup San Diego has been really just taking the lead with some areas that San Diego has, needs some work on. And this is a nonprofit organization. No one's getting paid. They're all just doing it in their spare time. So I appreciate what they're doing too.
Excellent. So as we wrap up, Brittany, how can people reach out to you? What's your social media game?
I found that everyone's kind of hopping on board my Facebook, which was originally a personal account, but now, you know, come join us.
A public figure now.
Yeah. But I prefer to get pitched if you're going to pitch me through email. So just shoot me an email. You don't need to send me a press release, just a couple of lines about why you think I'd be interested in your company. And then if I don't respond to that, feel free to hit me up on LinkedIn or Twitter or Facebook, any of those ways.
Yeah, so that's Brittany Meiling on LinkedIn. And what's your email?
B Meiling, so that's B, M as in Michael, E-I-L-I-N-G, at sdbj.com.
Excellent. So listeners, if you want to reach out to us here at Startup Talk, it's startuptalkpodcast@gmail.com. You can get us on Twitter at Startup Talk Pod. You can hit me up on Twitter at Millard Y. Chan.
Well, that wraps up another episode of Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew.
Thanks so much. Let's get started.
Hey, folks, please subscribe to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew on iTunes and rate and review us. It helps other people find this podcast. This episode was produced by Millard Chan and Andrew Moss. Our sound editor is Lee Liang. Additional voices from Mindy Nguyen. Our theme music is Good Times by Poddington Bear from soundofpicture.com. Our podcast Sherpa is Charles Wilchett.